a little bit of everything and do some singing, some dancing, some chatting with the guests, the skits, the monologues, the comedy.
Holmberg's Morning Sickness.
Wonderful comedy.
It really is a lot of fun.
Look, everybody, John Lovitz is here again. John is every time we go through this when John Lovitz comes here, which is he never remembers us. He never remembers being here. And then when he remembers, it's like those moments of clarity people with Alzheimer's have.
Yeah, this time.
Where you remember
time
everything.
This time he remembered
it's
us,
that guy.
But he didn't remember the place.
I remember you now.
From this angle, I remember.
Right, because you have your eyes closed.
No, but I was in Phoenix last time.
Yeah.
And then,
but they're like, it's 15
I know,
minutes.
But when I looked it up, I was thinking of driving here. It said it was like 30 or 40 miles farther, Tempe. So I go, we just went on the freeway. We drove to Phoenix. I'm like an idiot. I go, anyway, I thought you were in a different city.
Welcome
back. So I was
back.
Like, oh, you're here.
It's good.
You.
It's good to see you. It's us.
Good to see you.
We are friends once a year, it seems, that we have a
welcome.
That's right.
It's such a treat.
John Lovitz is at the Tempe Improv this weekend, starting tonight and all the way through Saturday night, and doing one show Friday and two on Saturday night, and then you're out of Dodge.
Yes, and Holmberg, I want to – I'm sorry, Herr Holmberg.
Oh, that's right.
I want to say, honestly, I think you're as funny or really, I think, funnier than me.
No.
Yep.
Okay.
So why don't you do stand-up?
You know what? I wanted to for a while, and then I met stand-up comedians.
Oh, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a sad life. Well, not only that, it's just a miserable existence.
Well, but you don't have to like leave your job.
You could do it on the side.
You could do it at night.
Oh,
yeah, late nights.
Get up at 4 in the
early
morning.
Early mornings.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, that's terrible.
Four in the morning.
Yeah, I really wanted to do it way back. Like I had an idea that I wanted to do it years ago, and then I started to hang out with the people at the, and I just wasn't. I don't fit here.
He had a prop.
Something was
chest.
Weird. I don't know. Maybe it was a fear. But it might have been.
No, I think it's because you're normal.
I think that was it. I think that's. I
no,
walked away
honestly.
Going, I'm too normal to do this. I think I have a normal.
No, you
side.
Need a sense of humor. That's what you need.
Yeah, and I have that, and it's dark, and it gets really weird, and I know I could do it, but I don't think I want to. I've done it a few times.
Well, if you don't want to do it.
I've happily done it a few times. You didn't do it before you started Saturday
it
Night.
It took
they
me 20 years to get the guts to do it.
Yeah.
I used to do Woody Allen and Lenny Bruce's routine in my college dorm, and I'm realizing now everyone listening to this goes, who's that?
No, they did that when I said John Lovitz is at the Tempe Improv.
Bastard. Let the games begin.
Yes.
Somebody actually emailed last time.
When
we were
I
here,
said you were funnier than me.
Yeah. Then
I meant funnier looking.
Somebody said last time you were
by the way, those compliments I gave you.
Damn you.
They were sincere. Well, oh, by the way, did you know that today is opposite day?
Somebody said you were mean to me last time you were here, and that's never happened before.
Mean?
I don't remember
think
that.
No,
well,
that
because
there?
They're just, they're listening, but
they don't
if
know
they saw,
playful.
They
yeah.
see that you're laughing and that we're
loving every second of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we're kidding each other.
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to talk to you, like, the big thing everybody's talking about, and David Spade made comments to the Saturday Night Live thing. Obviously, you're tied to Saturday Night Live for the rest of your life.
Oh, yes, I was on that show.
I recall years
unlike ago. Unlike you. Yeah. By the way, I was horrible on Saturday Night Live. And it's opposite day.
You were part of, which is, I'm a Saturday Night Live junkie, at least I used to be. You were part of the resurgence. Lorne Michaels came back the first year after he left for a while with you. And it was like a season of, you were the only thing going, you and Dennis Miller.
Well, they kept Dennis Miller and Nora Dunn and I. Yeah, but the truth is that they had such a talented cast.
Unbelievable.
That first year you had Randy Quaid, you had Robert Downey Jr., you had Nora Dunn. Now Robert was 20 years
Anthony
old.
Anthony Michael Hall was on
Anthony
that
Michael Hall was 17. But, you know, none of them had really done sketch comedy. And Robert talks about it now and says, you know, I thought I had to be really weird and avant-garde characters.
And
but he would
was.
Do like a character Spine Boy who could pull his spine out and just bounce around.
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious, and very unique. And he used to do these poems back then. He goes, oh, I write these poems. You want to hear one? I said, okay. So he would tell me one. And they were so bizarre, but you're a genius.
Yeah.
Those poems are like amazing.
Well, he did that.
They were so off the wall.
The suitcase. I remember he read poetry in a suitcase on the show.
Yeah, he goes, I felt I had to do weird stuff like that. But the truth is that we were. It's a huge age range from Michael Hall was 17. Yeah. Yeah. Randy Quaid was 37. He's a great actor. He had this huge age range, but after a while, you know, people like Denitra Vance, who was brilliant, and Terry
Joan
Sweeney
Cusack?
And Joan, and we all started to gel. And I was sad that the other people weren't brought back.
It was very
strange. I liked them very much. I missed them. It was my second year back. It was like going to a new school.
Yeah, it was like starting over again. But that first year, though, like I've always wanted to know what that was like in a writer's room with people who were actors. Because now you were groundlings.
Well, I wasn't everything. In the writers. I didn't even know if they had a writer's room then. But like everybody would just pair up and write stuff.
But they didn't like when they pitched the sketches and stuff. It was all like kind of the way of it's.
Oh well,
room,
the
right?
way the show works is on a Monday. The way it really works, you go into Lauren's office, see, and then everyone he's sitting behind his desk, and the office. It's not like it's not huge.
Right.
It's not enough room for 30 people. So people are all over the furniture. And, you know, 20 people are sitting on the floor.
Right.
You know, so he goes over each person, what are your ideas? And what you learn is if you pitch a sketch and you give away the joke.
Right.
On Wednesday, everyone, you know, is young and their short-term memory is like superb. Right. So when the joke comes up, you remember it from Monday when it comes up and you already heard it.
Right.
So they're not laughing. And you also realize – so you go, I'm not going to give away the joke, and that this is just – this Monday thing is it's meaningless. It's for the host.
Okay. So
it's a show for the host to go like, oh, we're working on this. And the host goes, oh, okay.
It just makes them kind of comfortable that things are happening.
Yeah, you know. And I mean, you are working on stuff like that, but you go – you know, if I said, oh, I'm working on a Master Thespian piece, I think it'll – for us, and I'll tell you about it later. I think it'll be very funny, and I'm working on that and a liar sketch.
Yeah.
But okay. That would go.
And then that's all you should say.
And that's it. Don't give away the game.
No. But you would hear, like, Norm MacDonald would talk about the times that certain pitches wouldn't get heard or people would be favored.
He'd do it
over.
On purpose. He would say something bad.
That what?
Like, he would pitch things that weren't funny on purpose just to say I'm working on something, but never tell them what he's actually working on.
Well, that's one way of doing it. Yeah, because you don't want to give away the joke.
Right. You don't want to tell them, really.
Because, read through. I mean, I wasn't there when he was there, so I don't know what he did. But when you don't want to give away the joke for read through because it – like, well,
it kills it for
I already,
you already told us that. Stop
you
it.
You want me to say the same thing twice?
But what do you think of the thing that
Who
happened?
Has Alzheimer's now? I just told you.
The thing that's going on now, though, where they hire a guy and then they find something a year ago and they fire him for something that was like
– Well, first of all, it wasn't a year ago.
When was it?
It was 8 months ago and then it was like a month ago.
Oh, we did it.
No, and then he did it recently.
Times. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you're fine with him going.
You know, I don't know the guy.
Yeah.
I feel I can't imagine being hired for that show and being so excited and then said, sorry, we got to let you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be
brutal. But it's also kind of good for him if he spends it properly because now people know his name, whereas he would have had to work for that on Saturday Night Live. And his name
they know his name because of
– It's awful.
They don't know him for his comedy. They know him for his infamous.
Right.
I don't know the guy. I wish him well. I just think if you look at it, I mean, if you look at what he said, there was a joke.
There wasn't
I mean,
funny.
I thought about it. A joke
funny.
Has a setup and a punchline. Yeah. Okay. So if you do a setup and a punchline and people don't laugh, your joke didn't work.
Right.
But when you listen to him saying it,
there's no joke.
There's no punchline. There's no joke. It's just out and out.
A kick.
Yeah, and so the guy running for president, Andrew Yang, he's just a Jew. And then I don't want to say the word, but you know when you say someone has a chink in their armor?
Yeah.
So he said that, but without in the armor.
Right.
So, the truth is no one is saying this, but I honestly believe that when he added the word Jew, that's when they went, okay, that's too far. Because, you know.
It was okay.
Well.
At chink.
Yeah, well, it wasn't okay.
But there's
but
not
then
as.
Then he did
but
it
then
again.
It struck a chord with you.
And then, well, I didn't hire the guy and I didn't fire. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Right.
And then when. I mean, it's such a debacle. But when And then when he tweeted his apology, he wasn't apologizing.
Yeah, it was almost like he was celebrating.
Like, hey,
I got fired
if I actually offended anyone, oops. You know,
it happens.
What do you mean if you actually – well, you did, you know, so I don't know. I wasn't there in any – you know, I mean, but it became such a thing,
right.
You know, and
– it was huge.
Well, the irony is that, you know, you go, he's on the – what is it? The Matt – I've never even heard of the guy, but now everyone knows who he is. Matt and Shane.
The
it doesn't
podcast.
Mean anything. I haven't heard of him, but I haven't.
Yeah. Right. I neither.
And Shane's secret podcast.
Yeah. Now you know why.
Not so secret.
I go, it's out.
So that, I don't know why no one said you're horrible at keeping a secret. What about
that's
that?
The biggest crime.
What
here.
About that?
The biggest crime is the guy blabs.
But, I mean,
he's a tattle.
But, you know, every comedian, everyone, they, you make, you do satire and you make fun of things.
Sure.
And there's going to be people that love it. And then people that get offended. So I'll do a joke in my act. You know, people get offended and I'll say, okay, I have a joke for you. Two Jews walk into a bar. Uh-huh. They buy it. They all laugh, right? And I go, oh, so you laugh at the Jew joke. Well, I'll remember that when I get to you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I can say it and it's not offensive because I'm Jewish, so I'm clearly making a joke in front of myself.
But, right.
So when you do other people, you got to be careful, but you got to have a joke.
Right, you have to do something, because I always said we did that yesterday,
and there was no
setup, there was nothing. It was
well,
just
no, there was
out,
no, it was just straight
slur.
Out, yeah,
yeah. But I did a thing yesterday where I think that accent, the Asian, whatever it is, Japanese, Chinese, whatever you want to go down, don't do it. Scottish, English, German. Even African.
What if I said this? Ni hao ma wa ha she xie.
It's racist, I think.
That's racist?
I think it is now.
Oh, really? Because I'm speaking actual Chinese.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
It's broken.
No.
It sounded Spanish.
But you know what? Have your callers call in.
It's you Chinese.
Chinese, Mandarin, and they'll go, he's speaking Chinese. He said, hello, how are you? I'm fine.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Do it again and we'll compare.
Homburg, dai tao zai.
Oh, that sounded that.
Yeah, that means Homburg has big fat head. That racist? No, you have big bald head. I said fat.
It's accurate.
It isn't accurate. It's a very thin head. It just happens to be larger
than
your average
head. No, but that's not right. I'm speaking Chinese.
Yeah.
But if I go, je ne sais pas perfectement, mais je pense que je suis le plus beau homme dans tout le monde parce que mes yeux sont marrons. Is that racist against
to Chinese
French?
People?
That's French.
Oh, I didn't know. It sounded
well,
Chinese.
I'm actually speaking French.
What are you saying?
I don't know
pen.
For certain, but I'm the most handsome. I think I'm the most handsome man in the world. Because my eyes are brown. Now, what if I the way I just said that sentence, I'm mocking myself.
A little.
Is that racist against the Jews? Because I'm mocking the way
it's
a Jew
anti-Semitic
speaks,
what you just said.
Which is
did.
Me.
It is kind of a weird little circle you've made there. But it's true. The point being, you can't do it. We had a game yesterday where it's like,
well,
call me
up. Context and reference. You need a joke as a setup and a punchline. So if you do a joke, it's like what happened with Michael Richards.
Yeah.
You know, and if you know what really happened, the whole thing was bad.
Hilarious.
It all was bad. But there was – and he's saying that it was wrong what he said. There was no joke. There was no punchline. He was just angry because the people above him wouldn't stop talking. And all they had to do was a doorman to say, keep it down. But five or six times he said, can you be quiet?
At least.
And then some guy whispered something in someone's ear, and he goes, all right, what did that guy just say to you? And he goes, and the guy goes, I don't want to say. He goes, what did your friend say? He goes, he said he doesn't think you're funny. Well, if you're on stage and you say that, it
painful.
When you're a comedian,
oh,
it's very
worst.
But then he lost his temper.
Yeah.
You know, and it was bad.
Oh, it was horrible.
But then the guys that he said that to went to the doorman, Larry, who a friend of mine who's African-American, said, thanks, we're going to run with this thing. Yeah,
really?
No, everyone doesn't know that. They don't know that
that
the owner of the club, not I don't know, the guy was even in the group, but it was one guy, I don't think it was part of their group, held a knife to him and said, I want my money back.
Really?
Yeah, it was bad.
Oh, my God, they got
and
horrible.
And then the Rainbow Coalition, Jesse Jack said, if you don't give us $5,000, we're going to pick at your club.
I didn't know any of this.
No, you didn't.
You've taught me
so
much.
You didn't bother to find out.
No, I just thought it was funny.
Well, that means you're racist.
I know, and I'm trying not to be. I think I'm a bigot. I don't think I'm racist. I'm a bigot.
But I mean, I think that what he said was wrong.
Horrible.
But at the same time, I feel bad that to get that job and lose like that is.
Yeah, no, it's tough. But it's also one of those like digging through somebody's past.
Well, times have changed
completely.
Yeah, I mean,
completely. Because you wouldn't have gotten the job. I'm sure you did something at the Groundlings if it was today, that you're thinking about it now, that you would have done something that you, you and Phil Hartman did things. And
no,
like,
not that, but something else.
Oh, what did you do? Oh my! What would you have done that would keep you from Saturday Night Live today?
Oh, that would ruin my career today? What I did was I – are you insane?
But you did it, so all it, now we just know we have to dig. That's it. If you want Love, It's Done, find this tape titled
– Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Okay, so you really want to know?
I do. I want to know what would keep you, what would make you nervous.
I was in the Groundlings and I met a woman, and she was beautiful. And I asked her out, and we went to dinner and everything.
Yeah,
and we were, and then we went to her place, and we were kissing.
Yes,
and she's like, "No, no, no." She succumbed, and she was a little drunk, but we made love.
All right,
and then I never saw her. And then she's like, "I don't know about." I go, "Oh, come on." I was a little drunk too, and then
she woke up and told you. Not well, sure we should have done
she,
that.
Yeah, she goes, I probably shouldn't have done that. I go, all right. So she. Well, I have to go. Where are you going? She goes, well, I'm actually moving. Where? You know, Phoenix.
It's my mother.
It's
I see
your
where this
wife.
Is going.
Yeah. Your wife.
She was four.
But 2 years later, same thing happened. Another woman from Phoenix, okay. And it was your mother.
The best part of that scenario.
You want to hear the funniest thing?
She was four.
I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Celebrity. So, and Regis Philbin was hosting, and he goes, he said something, and I told some story about, he goes, you were in love when you had your heart broken. Yes, yes, a wonderful woman we dated, but is she just an older woman? She wasn't for me. And her name is Joyce, which is his wife.
Right, yeah. Right.
He goes, all right, right. So now Wikipedia goes, he once dated an older woman who left and broke his heart. And it was a made-up story from when.
And that could destroy everything.
Yes.
Yes.
I always do that joke. Oh, do you want to hear a joke?
Of course I do. Finally.
Let me ask you this. Can you say the word penis on the air?
Yes. But you just can't show it like you did that lady in the Groundlings. That
never happened.
Yes.
Quit fishing. So this, well, you can't say this. These three little people, right?
They used midgets.
You said it, not me.
Right.
They go into a bar.
I didn't invent it.
And they're very depressed. And the bartender says, what's wrong? And they go, we just, you know, they close Ringling Brothers and we don't have any work. What are we going to do for money? The bartender says, well, across the street's the Guinness Book of World Records. And you have, he said the first guy, you have the smallest hands I've ever seen. You could have the world's smallest hands and get $1,500. He goes, all right, I'll try it. So he goes across. He goes, I got $1,500, the world's smallest hands. And the second one, he goes, and you have the world's smallest feet. You could get $1,500 for that. So he runs across the street. He goes, I got $1,500. I have the world record. And the third little person, what did you call them?
Love it.
No.
A dwarf.
The third, a midget.
The third M word. He says, well, I don't – my feet and hands are bigger. I
you
have to use the
M,
bathroom.
M, right?
The M word.
Okay. Maybe.
The little person. So the little person, he's only like 2 feet tall.
Oh, my.
He says, where's the restroom? So the bartender says, oh, follow me. So they're in the restroom and the bartender goes, listen, I just happen to notice. That's the smallest penis in the world. I bet you they have a world record for that.
Right.
He goes, they do. He goes, yeah, you'll believe me, you'll get it. 1,500. He goes, oh, all right. So he runs across the street and he comes back 15 minutes later and he says, well, did you get the money for the world's smallest penis? And the little guy goes, no. Who the hell is Herr Holmberg?
Smoking.
I sat and listened to that for 4.5 minutes.
Now someone's going to, you're mean. You said Holmberg has a small penis. No, I did not. I said he has the world's smallest penis. That is an accomplishment and a compliment.
Yeah. John
Lovitz. You got $1,500.
Hey, look, it's a payday. Lovitz is at the Tempe Improv tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. And you know what I saw? They did a documentary. I didn't know this. I'm switching gears here. I didn't know how close you and Phil Hartman are or were. I idolized him. I literally just on a pedestal beyond belief. And I saw this documentary.
You mean the one that's
– I don't know what it was on, but there you were, and it was very touching. You're on a boat, and I believe you're spreading his ashes in the ocean, and I didn't realize that –
They showed that?
Yeah, they charged you with that activity, and I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that. I guess assumed it would have been a another person.
Well, I'm going to tell you now, there's going to be a giant lawsuit.
Is there really?
Yeah, you know, the
right.
I didn't know, but the
– I think it's the Reels channel. Which we own, so please don't, because that's just going to hurt my
money.
No,
there's one coming out, and the woman, her name's Allison Wiener, and she's the producer, and I'm just saying that she's a horrible person, and she
there's gonna be
lied
now.
To his family. No, I have all the proof. She okay. lied, says, no, it's not going to be about Phil's death. It's going to be a celebration of his life.
Right.
It's not like the last time we did it 20 years ago. Why are they even doing it now just for money? And so it comes out, and it's called The Final Days of Phil Harmon. I go, oh, it's not about his death. Just called The Final. Well, I never said it was. Yes, she did. And the whole family's upset. She
Are you in on this? Did you do any of the work?
No, I didn't do it because I'm not stupid. I know let's clarify. I'm not stupid about this kind of stuff. I couldn't be a doctor. I'm an idiot. But this I know. But the press, if you've dealt with them, they do lie.
All the time.
All the time, and I knew that she was lying, and I was right. And
but they have the home video of you on the tape.
If that's in there,
if it's in the new one, this was older, and you were on.
Imagine what you're telling me is that someone videotaped you without your knowledge, the worst moment of your life,
horrible.
And they're showing it on television, and I didn't know, and I'm like, what?
Am I the one breaking the news to you?
Yes.
Is that right? Well, now I feel horrible about it. I was actually being complimentary. I thought,
there's a reason you're called Hair Home.
I try to ruin things.
I'll ask you about that later. But Phil and I idolized him. I met him in the Groundlings. And
you were his understudy.
No. What happened was he'd been there for like 10 years.
Right.
And I'd just gotten into their B company. And I'm trying to get in the main one so that Tom Maxwell, the director, said, well, you could understudy this part in this show that they're doing for the Olympic Arts Festival called Chick Hazard. It was 1984, and the Olympics was happening in L.A. So they chose Phil to do this character called Chick Hazard. Excuse me. You're making me have gas in my stomach.
You need a bromo?
Probably. So Phil was a detective from the 40s. So like spoofing Humphrey Bogart and all that, you know. So – the director said, "Well, somebody wants a break from the show, so you could try doing this part for a few shows and understudy, and then he goes, let's see how we work together because if you get in the main company, you'll be working with me, and I have never worked with you, so I go, is that sound fair? I go, yeah, that sounds fair. I go, how did you think of me for this part anyway? And he goes, it was Phil's idea. Well, Phil was in everyone's mind,
he's a god, king
of the Groundlings, giant star, like." In the Groundlings, it was our whole life. So he was the king of the theater, you know. So I'd never even met him. And he comes down the hallway after I got this, and I saw him, and he was in his, you know, trench coat and makeup with the fedora and his fake beard, and he looked like, you know. And I go, hey, Phil, hi, I'm John Lovitz. He goes, I know who you are, John. I go, like, you do? I go, well, anyway, thanks for suggesting me for the part. Oh, yeah, I think you'll be fantastic. I go, thanks. And he walked by. And I remember in my head thinking, oh, my God. Phil Hartman spoke to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how high. And so I got in the Groundlings, and I was so grateful to him that I was like a puppy dog. So he became like my big brother he was 9 years older than me, that I always wanted.
Yeah.
So I was like, Phil. You know, and he was the only one in the Groundlings. We were all broke. I was a messenger.
Yeah.
He was a graphic designer. He had a job. He had a new car.
He designed album covers for like Toto.
His brother was a music manager.
Yeah.
And said, can you do these album covers? Like the best of America if you look it up.
Yeah.
So he said, Phil drew something. He goes, something like this. He goes, something like this? This.
Yeah, it's the album
cover. If you look it up, you can see it.
Yeah.
Best of America, and you can see that's a drawing of the three guys.
Yeah.
Phil did that. He did the logo for Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yeah.
He was super talented. So anyway, I said, hey, I want to see your house. You know, you have a house.
I've never seen one of those.
So he invited me over, and it was the first – he goes, you're the first person I've ever had over to my house, you know.
He said that?
yeah. I go, from the Groundlings. I said, what? I go, you're kidding. He goes, no. I go, why? He goes, I'm just private, you know.
But
we became like brothers, you know. So when I got SNL and, you know, I used to go to his house and he goes, he'd be on the phone. He goes, you know, and the way he talks, you're like, I got to go. My friend John Lovitz, he's the new star of Saturday Night Live, just got here. So, you know, he was just trying to make me feel great.
Right. Yeah. Did you help him get to SNL?
Yeah.
Well,
what happened
is
you mentioned, the year before. And then, so they kept Nora and Dunn and Dennis and I. And then Dinah Minan, who was a producer, said, who do you work well with? We want to hire people you work well with. So I recommended four people from the Groundlings.
Right.
Phil and Tim Stack and Lynn Stewart and Tress McNeil. Like Lynn Stewart was like in Pee Wee's Playhouse, Mr. Vaughn. You know.
Tress McNeil is all the Simpsons.
Right, all the Simpsons. Yeah. Those were the people I looked up to. They were the four best people in the Groundlings.
Right.
Like when I got the show, I go, what about Phil and Tim? And I go, they've been in here for years. I just got it. So I was thrilled to get it, but I was like, they're like –
he's taking your picture, please.
So anyway, I recommended Phil. I pushed really hard for him, and Lauren goes, well, John, how long has he been in the Groundlings? I go, 11 years. I go, well, if he hasn't made it by now, don't you think there's a reason?
Yeah.
I'm like, I guess.
Yeah, you missed him, Lauren.
But I go like – because I said to Lauren, I said, Lauren, I go, if you think I'm good, I go, you should see Phil. He's a genius. I go, he's like great, you know, way better than me. So he can do anything, you know. And so
he dominated the first show of that next season. He was in everything.
Oh, please.
He did.
Did he?
In the Chopping Broccoli sketch. And then he did the
but he's just great.
Yeah,
you know?
He was
and so,
brilliant.
So he
did that detective on there, I think. That was the first time.
I don't through. Now you're
and the
just
church lady was on.
You're making stuff.
Madonna hosted? Or no, Sigourney Weaver. Madonna talked about
it. Yeah, Sigourney Weaver was the
That's
second
right.
the first year. But what happened I said, why isn't he, you know, why? He's so talented. What is it? Because he didn't want it. He goes, I like my life. I like writing scripts and not being famous. I don't
Wow.
know. And Lorraine Newman had saw me in that show that I did for Chick Hazard. And she befriended me, recommended me to Lauren. And then I got an agent. I got a movie with Charles Grodin. We're on Catalina Island. And he said, I was supposed to meet Lauren. And on his own, Charles Grodin called Lauren Michaels and said, can you wait? You should take a good hard look at this guy. Can you meet him on Friday?
No kidding.
And I'm like going, how you know him? It was like everybody knows everybody.
Except
in
you.
That world.
Right.
Well, it was a whole separate world.
It's crazy.
It's like me. When I come into your studio,
you
I'm
know
coming
everybody.
From that world. And you go, oh, he's from that planet.
And I just revere.
Please open the doors.
I revere your life because I could never, ever be part of it.
Thank you. I was waiting for you to finish. so
Which
no.
Is what all
when
your
my agent,
say.
He goes, I got the agent, Mike Eisen said, he goes, oh, you should do Saturday Night Live. I go, yeah, right. He goes, no, I'm serious. I go, hey, Mike, I have a better idea. Why don't I land on Pluto? Why don't I do that?
He
goes, no, I'm serious. And I go, would you just shut up? Well, I'm going to submit your tape. I go, all right, do whatever you want. I go, you're ridiculous. It was another world to me.
Yeah.
I go, come on, man, what are you nuts?
You didn't think you had a chance?
None.
And because why? Insecurity or did you really think I'm
no,
good but not
it was
ready?
So no, because it was – I'd had one job when I was 25 for 2 weeks in acting. So now I just got in the Groundlings.
Yeah.
They go, now I want to get seen and get work. I go, what about Saturday Night Live? I go, oh, come on. Because, well, the show was huge.
Yeah.
I go, that's like the break of a lifetime. I go, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Me? I just got in the group
I'm
after
not qualified.
2.5 years. No, not that I'm not qualified.
Yeah.
No, but it was such a giant leap.
Right.
It's huge.
It is a big
giant. Well, it was like saying, you know, I
It's like going from The Apprentice to the presidency.
No, it's like going, oh, I just made the track team in high school. What about the Olympics? What? No, you could do it. I go, I just got my high school team. I'm in ninth grade. No, I think you could be in the Olympics. And then they go, you're in it. I qualified? Yeah, you're faster than everybody in the world. What?
That's how you found
Come
out.
Come on.
So you
and then
even
you
audition.
Win it. And you're like, what?
And then you're there.
Well, Charles Grodin recommended. No, I had to keep auditioning. And it ended up being they're going to choose one person out of the final nine people that showed up for these auditions in New York. And I go, oh, yeah, they're going to – one out of nine. Oh, me. Right.
Right.
You know. And Pam Madison, who was a great comedian and auditioned with me, she passed away sadly. I think she was from here, but anyway, she should have got the show. She was great. So she goes, We auditioned, and then she goes, John, I'm going to St. Patrick's Cathedral to light a candle and pray I get the show. Do you want to go with me and light a candle? I'm like, yes. And I'm like, well, Pam, I'm Jewish. Well, do you want to go with me and light a candle and pray that you get the show? Yes. I go, I'll try everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I was trying hard to get it when I finally got the auditions. So,
did you get a call? How do you find out?
Jesus, if you get me this show, I'll become a Christian. And then in my head, where he couldn't hear me, I thought, yeah, that's the ticket. Come on, man. Jesus, you're Jewish, so am I. Come on, lend a brother a hand. And I got the show. I'll believe in you that you're the son of God. And I got it. So yeah. I believe he's the son of God.
Yeah.
I also believe that I am God. And when I run into Jesus, do you know what I say? Hello, sonny. Anyway, the point is, I got the show, and then I recommend Phil. And then Phil got the show, and he also was in that same movie that I got with Charles Grodin.
What was that?
Last Resort.
I don't remember that.
It was a very low budget. You know Roger Corman, the producer of the movie? Guess who produced this movie? His wife. Son.
His wife. Oh, good.
Really? It wasn't even him.
You got the low-end Corman gear.
And then, and you know who else was in the movie who became huge? Megan Mullally.
Oh, no kidding?
Yeah.
She was in that. Jeez Louise.
So,
really?
So then.
Are we going to talk like that when we're surprising?
Really?
Right, my friend and I do that. Where are you? I'm in Chicago.
Yeah. Lucy. Who is that? Gail Gordon that used to do that?
Yes.
That was a Phil Hartman thing.
No, that was a. Well, I told him to do that. I knew he could do it. It was Frank Nelson.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
No, he was on Jack Benny. Yes.
Well, that wasn't Rochester.
No, Frank Nelson.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
He wasn't Rochester.
I thought Rochester
was Eddie Rochester.
That's right. Yeah.
Rochester was Rochester.
That's right. They didn't really try too hard with names then. They just named you after yourself.
It was a compliment. That guy was brilliant.
Yeah. But I thought, okay, so it was Gail Gordon on the Lucy show, though. Why are we talking
about
this?
But Frank Nelson did
that. And then Phil Hartman did it because you told him to.
Well, we did a sketch where Robert Smile came up where I was Master Thespian. It was Robert's idea. But I'm Santa Claus at Macy's.
Right.
And Phil's the manager. So Phil should do that like Frank Nelson. Well, Mr. Thespian. You know, and he did it great. I knew he was great.
You know my favorite character you had was?
All of them?
Singer. Well, other than that, was Eddie Spumoso. And I don't know why. It was the most subtle joke Saturday Night Live ever had where you'd call your mother. And you would say,
"No, I know that. I did that in my audition.
It was the best thing ever because the joke is the person who's not talking."
Well, I loved movies from the 40s, and then I did it in a sketch once, an improv, and we ended up writing a sketch of it. But it was an improv, and it was gangsters. And what would happen is there would be like three of us, and then on stage, and then two of they would like go off stage, and they wouldn't come back on. To leave you hanging there. And they would just be looking at you laughing.
Right.
And you're like,
get out here.
Get out here. And they're like, mm-mm. Right? So I was on the phone. And it's like, a gangster from the 40s.
Right.
But I thought in my head later on that he's like Al Capone got syphilis of the brain. Right. So he has that. He's not. So he's like, hello, Ma. And I had my hand to my ear like a phone. And I'm by myself going, all right, I got to go. Yeah. I got to go. What? You know, so it was funny because it's like, I'm not on the phone. It's my hand to my ear, but I can't get off my
But my
hand.
Favorite line, and I still do it, I go, hello, Ma. It's me, Eddie.
No,
Eddie
Spumoso. Well, do you want to do it or do you want me to do it?
Yeah.
We don't have all day. I'll do it. You said I was funny
to
you anyway.
There's a gangster on the phone to his mother from the 40s.
I already
Eddie Spumoso. No, there's more. Ring, ring. Hello? Oh, hey, Ma. It's me. No, I ring the phone. Hello, Ma? Yeah, it's me, Eddie. Eddie Spumoso. Your son. Spimozo. No, Eddie. The good-looking one. Yeah, I'm all right. Well, as good as a guy can be after almost getting bumped off by his best friend. Thanks for the tip. Now, listen, Ma, I'm getting married. Yeah, tomorrow. 8:00! So have Father Murigliano come on over to the house about 7:45. All right, I gotta go. I gotta go with it. Yeah? Well, how did you end up on the floor? Well, wipe it up. Is it curly?
Oh, God.
All right, go ahead and poke
remember
it.
Remember this part.
Go ahead and poke it. Yeah, I'll wait. All right, I gotta go. I gotta go. Yeah. Oh, all right. Happy birthday. Yes, yeah, you can have a piece of cake. No, I gotta go. I gotta go. What? No, you cannot have a piece with a rose on it. The rose is for me. I tell you, the rose is for me. No, I gotta go. I gotta go. Hello, hello. Operator, operator. Oh, how do you like that? My old ma hung up on me. You're syphilis of the brain.
Who's supposed to clap at it? That's brilliant. It's just brilliant. That's one of my favorite things.
You want to hear
did.
The other thing I auditioned
no.
with?
No. John Lovitz is at. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. Do what you do.
Yeah.
So this was a sketch. I could.
You did one for me in the green room once when you were hitting on my, you were hitting on my mother incessantly.
Yeah. Ooh.
Well,
ooh.
The only. Yeah. The only reason I was hitting on your mother.
Okay.
She reminds me of you if you had hair.
Ooh, well, that says two things.
Is it curly?
Joking.
Opposite day.
I don't even remember your mother. I'm sure she's very nice.
She's a very nice lady.
Yeah, I'm sure she is.
Yeah, she liked you a lot.
She said
nice.
She regretted.
You know why she liked me? That, you know what that means, right?
No.
She's a genius.
You did one about someone in transition. Or something. I don't remember what it was. Like somebody was going through the transition and kind of slipping back and forth in and out, which was way before this was popular. But you did it.
Well, thank you for
me
ruining
and me only.
My career.
It was so funny.
In it.
What
and
was
I
her
was
name,
doing
Phyllis
it for you and you alone, and now you're bringing it up. Oh, no, was it Phyllis? I forget. I was just making it up on the spot.
I don't think you were.
I was.
Like,
really, I
you
wanted
auditioned
to do it.
With it.
It's why I left the show. No. Here's what I auditioned with. So I did it with Tim Stack. He did a guys at World War II, like at the in you know looking at the bombs and smoking cigarettes. And I was doing my imitation of Dana Andrews, who was a great actor in the 40s, and he had a certain way of speaking. And I am proud to say I met his granddaughter, and I did it for her, and she was crying laughing. She goes, "That's it. He would talk like I go, would he talk like that in real life?" She goes, "Yes." So anyway, it was a guy saying, "How'd you end up in the war?" Right. So I go, how'd I end up in the – so imagine a guy, he's smoking a cigarette and with his humor and he's talking to a sergeant. How'd I end up in the war? One paper bag came in the mail one day. Wrapped inside was a uniform with my name on it. Grandma got to it first. She didn't want to lose the only man who'd rub her feet. So she put it on, took my place. Nobody knew. Because that uniform fit her like a glove. Right after she added about 15 yards of canvas material. You see, Captain, Grandma was what you'd call a hefty gal. Oh, she liked to eat. In fact, she was quite the chow hound. Ah, who am I kidding? She was a fat pig. Anyway, when her platoon boat hit the beach, the old beef cow rolled up on the deck. Tried to crawl under a barbed wire fence, and she got stuck. So I lost my old grandmother. The army, they sent for me again. And now I'm here. Oh, my God. So, anyway,
again,
and during that, I looked up at Randy Quaid, who was 6'4", on my left. And Tim Stack, who I would do, is also 6'4", and would be on my left. So when I go, you see, Captain, and then I looked up at Randy and I went, oh, and I did like my head, like a double take. I went, oh, because he was the same
huge.
As Tim.
Right.
That move got me the show. And you know
being
why?
Surprised that height.
Yes.
Won you the show.
Al Franken, Senator Al Franken.
Former Senator.
Anyway.
Because he was in the Groundlings too.
No, he was producing the show. He produced the show that year with Tom Davis, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
And Al
did Tom Davis pass away? I didn't know that.
Yeah, anything else you want to bring
I'm sorry,
up?
You
set?
Brought it up.
So that's right.
You've got TV to
anyway,
do.
The point is Al said, I swear to God, he said, you know, John, you were everything we didn't want in one person. Oh, thank you, Al. Well, then why did you pick me? Because you were funny.
Yeah.
Because when I did that look, every time I did it, he just started
that's
laughing.
Great, yeah.
You were everything we didn't want in one person. And then Lauren's like, no, I said that. I go, oh, great, thank you. Fighting over the
both
insult.
Of them.
Over whether or not you have
I go, what did you
quality.
Want? Well, you know, like a leading man like Tom Hanks, kind of like that, but you were very funny. Well, and that's how I got the show, great. An accident. And I was funny. than you.
Now you've changed it.
Opposite day.
It wasn't me.
Terry Holmberg. It's always fun to have you.
Or as they say, Nazis can be nice.
John Lovitz at the Tempe Improv tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at TempeImprov.com. John Lovitz, leave us with words of wisdom. You've had to leave for like 15 minutes. I don't know if you knew that. I've kept you here. I've ruined your day.
Oh.
That's what I do. Look at how looks at Brad.
You liar.
I'm not a liar. I just got a note that said TV.
All right. Everyone says to me, what's the secret to success?
Yeah.
The secret is there's no shortcuts. It's are you willing to do what you have to do to get what you want? Are you willing to put in the time that it takes you personally to learn a new skill?
Yeah.
And if you are, you can do whatever you want. You're welcome.
You sucked me into that.
It's all true.
I know, yeah. But in the ending, I got me. When you did the MILF contest.
The ending got you. You have to explain every
joke. You asked me.
It's a joke, and then you kill it. Now, why was that funny?
No, I didn't do it.
Two Jewish people walking into a bar and buying it.
I didn't.
Well, you weren't expecting them to buy it. You're expecting an ordinary drink. But they bought it because they're Jews, and I can say that because I'm a Nazi.
Let me tell you how hosting works.
I had something on deck for you. So when I thought you were done, I was ready to talk.
Sorry,
and then
ahead.
You hit me hard, and I started to giggle. So the ending got me. I didn't explain your joke.
You just did
it
now.
It wasn't funny enough to explain.
Exactly. And I don't talk like that.
You do.
What is your question?
Yes, we do.
Yes, Holmberg. What is
your question? When you did the MILF contest, you said you were doing some serious acting studying. You made me read Shakespeare with you. And we did it, and you said I was better than you, and it made you sad for a second because, of course, I was. And then, are you still doing it?
MILF contest?
Read Shakespeare.
Yes, all of them. Did you start?
Am I still judging MILF contest?
Yeah.
No, because you stopped doing it.
Well, if you'd like,
much to my chagrin,
much to all of our chagrin, we'd love to. You know why we?
Well,
stopped?
I remember my agent goes. I was doing the first time I did stand up here in Phoenix, and he goes. They want you in the show, but listen, they want you to judge a MILF contest, but you got to get up at like 8 in the morning. All right. So I get here, and there's all these naked women. I'm like, wait a minute. This is helping me sell tickets?
Oh, it did.
Why did you stop
sold
doing
out.
It? Why did you stop doing it?
Well, because here's the reason, and everybody
me,
thinks.
Me, hashtag me too.
It's sort of, but it was because more so.
I remember it. That's where the whole Me Too movement started.
It was a couple
that
years
MILF
before.
Contest. No.
But you took one back to your room.
It started there. No, I didn't, but I asked one of the women.
I was in the Groundlings, and she's like, so?
She had just gotten new fake breasts, and yeah. I said, how many did you get? And she said, me too. That was the beginning.
No, but we stopped because a memo went out in the building that said if anybody here who works here is uncomfortable with it, they don't have to come to work the next day. Well, of course nobody's going to come to work when they've got a paper that says you don't have to come to work.
Well, why would they send out that memo?
Because they have to protect their own asses in case someone was. So nobody showed up, so it was assumed that everyone was uncomfortable, even the guys. So we're like, this is terrible.
No, they just wanted the day off.
Exactly, yeah. But you can't have that both ways. Double-sided tape. Somebody's getting stuck.
If anyone's offended by this, on Sunday, you can have the day off.
Right.
Well, I'm already off on Sunday. Well, that's not our fault.
Don't get offended by two things. Take the day.
Why can they be offended? They'd have to come into the studio and see it.
Right. Well, no, the girls
and the
were
women
milling
have
around
to come
in their underwear.
Clothed.
Right. Well, we put up a curtain and everything.
They were milling around in their underwear.
Yes, it just
is that what you call
yes.
flashing? You go to a strip club. Look at those strippers milling around. I'm offended.
Milling about.
Stop milling about. What's her name? Millie. Millie. Look at her milling about. Look at those bosoms milling about my head.
See, we could just go to a strip club together and make our own quiet corner MILF contest. They don't have to know they're in it. Kind of like the way that lady didn't know you were going to get on her that night. She was drunk.
Again, you do that. We could have done that, but you just announced it on the radio, so now we can't.
All the ideas I have are on the radio.
Do you think that no one is listening?
Well, not since you've been here.
Trust me. You say anything on the radio anywhere now.
Yeah, it goes out.
It goes out. If someone sees it, boom.
Yeah.
All over the world.
You're not worried about that, though. You got your comfortable shoes,
well,
John.
Well, what
Lovitz.
Can you do?
Your comfortable shoes. People know you don't have malice.
I don't say anything that I apologize for.
But don't you think it's maliciousness rather than like intent is the problem? If it comes across as malicious, you can say something like the roasts. The roasts are safe haven. You can say anything.
Well, it's
and it's safe.
Yes, because it's
Everybody's
in
on
joke. The roast is you're making jokes about somebody.
Yeah. Right, but it's not malicious.
So you know that everything you say is a joke. Now, you might say, I don't find that joke funny.
Right.
Okay. But not everything is funny to everybody. So you know, that's the way. What can you do?
You've proven that.
Touché.
Thank you.
Touché, Daitaza.
Now we do have to go. Does he really have TV?
Touché, yeah. Big yes. Fat Head.
Oh, no kidding. I'm sorry.
Touché, right. Big Fat Head. Touché, Daitaza. No,
is
why
that really
you find
big,
someone?
Okay, I believe you. It's
yes,
big,
find someone
head.
That speaks Mandarin. You'll go. I'm
but
speaking Chinese.
Why do you learn big fat head in Mandarin? You know nothing other than that.
Oh, because I like teasing the. You know the comic. I think he was here. Joe Coy.
Oh yeah, he's
Joe
here,
Coy's
this weekend.
Huge now, huge. But he used to open for me.
Is that right?
Not as legs comedically. Yes.
Then it would be comedically.
So, there was a woman I knew that worked at this golf range, Esther, and she spoke Chinese. So I said, Esther, can you teach me some Chinese? She goes, okay. So she's had her accent. She goes, say, hi, how are you? I'm fine. Ni hao ma.
Okay.
Waha. So that means.
How are you? I'm fine.
I think it means how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
I don't think you know. I think you
no,
told
and she goes, ni hao ma. That means how are you? And you go, waha xie xie. I'm fine. Thank you.
Right.
Waha xie xie.
But that's racist because Joe's Korean.
It's not racist. It's Chinese.
Yeah, but Chinese to Joe
the
is
Chinese
racist.
Language.
But he's Korean.
So I said, how do you say big fat? No, he's not.
He's Filipino.
Filipino.
Well, who cares? They look exactly the same.
Oh. And that was Harry Holmberg who just said that comment.
Yeah, with even Chinese
what
to a Filipino.
What was your intent?
It was not malicious. I love
Joe. So, I said, how do you say big fat head in Chinese? You go, Dai Tao Zai. So I go to Joe Coy. I go, hey, Joe Coy, Dai Tao Zai. Joe Coy, big fat head. It's
and
stupid.
It's
you know,
great.
When I was in college, we would I lived in the dorm and everyone, we're all friends.
Sure.
A bunch of us. So we'd have dinner every night. Leonard, who was born in Mexico. Peter, who was an artist, was American but Chinese. Richard and Buck, who were African American, but back then we said black. And we would have dinner and just rip each other make fun of our backgrounds. And we were crying laughing because it was so stupid and we were funny. And then we'd do it for like a half an hour and we would just – every night we would do it. And we were just crying laughing. And I go, it's so stupid. I go, it doesn't even mean anything. I go, well, you're an artist. You want to be a singer. I want to be an actor. It's so exciting. We're starting our lives together.
Yeah.
Because we're making fun of it, you know.
Right. Did you ever get one of them drunk?
Oh, dare you. No.
Sorry.
But one time in the sophomore, we had a
you're going to get me in trouble.
A Western party. And I invited this beautiful girl. And the last minute, an hour before the party, she said, oh, I can't go. I was like, God, I was so upset. So they had a Western party. So every drink was whiskey and something.
Right.
So I just said, you know what? I don't drink hard, but I'm going to get drunk on purpose. So I go, right. I'm going to serve a drink and drink a drink with shots of whiskey. And I did that for like an hour and a half. Uh-huh. So after an hour and a half, I go, hang on. I was like slurring. Then they'd say, I wanted this. Okay. And I turn around and I forget. Just turning around and they start laughing. So anyway, the point is there was this beautiful girl, American, Mexican, right?
Right.
Gorgeous. The sexiest girl lived in another one of the dorms, but we're having a big Western party. So they had bales of hay in the dorm. So I'm sitting on the talking to this girl. I go and serve drink. I go, hey, let's I was shy, but I'm drunk, so I'm right. But let's. Hey, I'll meet you afterward. I'm almost done serving drinks. So I meet her and we're sitting on this bale of hay, you know, and so we start kissing, and she's like, oh, I've never kissed a Jewish, I was very shy, right?
Right.
But not now. She goes, oh, I've never kissed a Jewish guy before. Do all Jewish guys kiss like that? And I was like, well, yeah. I mean, I was like puzzled by the question. I go, yeah. No, baby, just me. I was like 19. And then I see my other friend, Tony. He sticks his head out and he's like, he sees me and he's like smiling. He's crawling out, sneaking, looking at me, giving me the big thumbs up. Yeah. Oh, it was hilarious.
Baby.
Well, what a question. What does that have to do with my religion?
And you would have to make out with a bunch of Jewish guys to know that.
Yes.
Yes.
And you did that. What was your conclusion?
You're the second best.
Ew.
Netanyahu.
It was very funny, though. Do all Jewish guys kiss like that? I don't know. Yeah, baby. No, baby, just me.
Awesome.
I got all smooth. No, baby. Baby, just me, like it was Robert Wagner.
He told us two Me Too stories in that entire hour.
Yes, he did.
That's nice. Thank you, John.
Impressive.
I appreciate that.
No, that was kissing a girl wasn't.
Yeah, but you and somehow or another you insulted
all
the
Jews by
doing
it. Well,
I could say
she. How did I didn't insult?
You said they're all bad kissers.
No, I did not.
You said notoriously you lumped them into one group.
Yeah, I was talking about because I didn't want her to go after anyone else. I wanted her to be with me,
especially a Jew.
No, baby, just me. She brought it up, not me.
You closed the door on it. You could have just walked away like a good person would have.
Oh, please! God, she was sexy.
What happened to her? Do you know?
God bless her.
Deported.
I don't know, but it's, you know, 40 years later. So
no, she's horrible now. Never mind. she's in her 60s?
Ugh. No, I tell you, though, I'll tell you a quick
story. Yeah, oh, yeah, another quick story.
There was a, I met a guy. Listen to this.
Okay.
This is what it is like today, which my act is, I don't understand. This is how much things have changed.
Okay.
A guy, he's a very successful investment, I don't know, investment. He's very, he's probably a multimillionaire.
He's Jewish.
No.
No.
Oh. And I said, what? I go, well, and then he talked about he used to be a professor. I go, where? He goes, well, I was a professor of at Yale. I go, of what? He goes, economics. I go, oh, well, you're an idiot. Professor of economics at Yale University. So the guy's like, obviously, I'm kidding, brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah.
Really nice man. And we're talking about how everything's changing. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, I was just back at Yale, and they asked me to speak or teach a class, so I did it again, you know, just to
right.
do it. And I – anyway, I was on the campus, and I held a student, a girl, 20 years old, is walking by. So I held the door open for her.
Oh, boy.
And she looks at me and screams, F the patriarchy. I can't say the F word.
Right,
F
right,
the patriarchy. It's like, what? He's holding the door open for her, Trina, and she yelled at him. And then another guy said, I was talking to a group of women about something and for
right.
business, whatever, and I guess they were going to lunch. He goes, well, what would you ladies like to do? And one of them yelled, she goes, what makes you think I'm a lady?
Wow.
I was like, what?
I like to hold doors for people with my –
You can't say anything.
Yeah.
I hold the door open for women with my dick out now.
We're on the radio.
Oh, I shouldn't say that on there either. These are my secrets.
You got $1,500
that way,
for it.
They can't be offended by me opening the door. See?
There was a guy. I do a tennis charity with Chris Evert. Speaking of dick. And there's a
Wait,
guy
Chris
there.
Chris Evert's a dick?
And every time. No. And they donate lots of money. The guy sadly passed away.
Right.
But every time they say his name. All the like the celebrities and tennis players, we're all like dying laughing.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. No one else is laughing but us.
What's his name?
She goes, I like to thank Dick Seaman.
You got to close on that. That's your
very enemy. Nice man. He passed away sadly. Very generous man.
Well, his memory will live on. We'll never forget. We'll never forget Dick Seaman. Thank you, John. It's all because of you.
You know Michael Hunt?
Yes, we all know Mike.
Mike who?
Michael Hunt.
Hmm?
Mr. Hunt.
Yeah.
Of the Hunt family.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything.
His sister's big and fat.
You said dick.
She's one of the big fat Hunts that we talk about.
No, what's that guy, Sam?
The Greek tycoon?
The singer, Sam Smith.
Yeah.
He goes, he's bi- This is what I don't get. The first of all, he goes, I'm binary.
Yeah.
What's that? Binary? What are you, a computer code?
Got math skills.
Yes.
No,
I'm a
woman and a man. Okay. So he doesn't want to be called he or she.
Prove it.
He wants to be called they or them.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. What happens to
And I'm thinking, well, why don't you just call yourself heesh? It's less. You're one person.
Nicer.
You're not two or three.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could be anything you want. So I go, well, I identify as the country of China. So I'm going to go to the president and say, I'd like a check for $1 billion. Why? Because I lent you owe me $1 billion.
Yeah.
But I'm China. No, you're John Lovett. No. Yes, but I identify now as China.
The government.
Now write the
check,
China.
Please. And he's like, have to do it. He's China.
Don't want to offend the people who are identifying as things. Yeah,
you
care.
Remind me of
it.
Someone who would, if you. If you're like from Virginia,
yeah.
but you're Chinese, you'd be Vachina. That's you. Vachina.
All right, you have to go do these great jokes on TV
too
now.
Late. Too late.
I don't do these jokes in my act. They're too corny.
Well, thanks for wasting them. I like them. You found your audience, but we've lost all of ours.
I know, right?
John Lovitz.
Can you believe I'm 62?
No, you're only 62?
What's wrong with me? I haven't changed since I'm 13.
I know. I'm the same way. I feel terrible about it. John Lovitz at the Tempe Improv this weekend. You
Except
have to go.
I'm bigger.
You have to go.
Down you're bigger below, than you are. Down below.
John Lovitz, everybody.
I was standing next to a horse.
You're all right, man.